This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to a special edition of the iFanboy podcast, Justice League: The New Frontier DVD. Welcome to a special edition of the iFanboy podcast. My name is Connor. I'm here with
Ron.
And I'm Josh. But that's not all.
I'm Gordon the intern.
All right, we're all here.
We're all here to talk about Justice League: The New Frontier DVD that came out recently. This is the second of the DC Universe animated original movies that their Warner Brothers is making. The first was Superman Doomsday, and we already did a podcast about that. If you're interested, you can go back on the feed and check it out. But this is just Justice League: The New Frontier. It is a highly anticipated adaptation of Darwyn Cook's mega graphic novel, The New Frontier, which was a big deal since it came out way back when.
2004, right?
2004 was some of the issues, yeah. And then the Absolute Edition was a huge success in 06 and 07, so this is the adaptation. So, guys, we've all seen it. What do we think, Ron?
It's no surprise, or anybody who listens to iFanboy knows that we all love the comic series. And when I heard that it was going to be the DVD adaptation, I got a little worried, because whenever you're adapting something from the original thing, it's never quite as good. But my God, was that a good movie! It was great.
Josh?
Yeah, I pretty much agree. And as you guys know, I don't really care for that stuff all that much, and I tend to be pretty critical on it. But I found myself watching it, and I was totally enthralled in a way that I usually am not. So I really liked it.
Gordon, the intern?
I'm going to have to say that was pretty much amazing.
Nice.
I absolutely loved it. Let's give a brief plot synopsis to people who don't know. Justice League: The New Frontier is a story that puts the DC universe in the end of the 1950s, and it deals with the formation of the Justice League. Basically, it's how all these disparate heroes come together, and at the end come together to face a menace that brings together the Justice League. So that's the basic plot. It centers around Green Lantern, The Flash, John Jones, the Martian Manhunter. Not really the Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, although they're all in it. It's really about the lower tier characters,
and it really plays off the kind of the paranoia of the 50s with a lot of the Golden Age heroes kind of being driven out of business by the government due to fear of them, and Superman and Wonder Woman having to take an oath to the government to basically to you know, say they'll serve and all that, you know, and so it's
of loyalty to the
To the government. So it's not a good time for superheroes, and then it deals with the ushering in of the new age or a new frontier as these new Silver Age heroes emerge.
We should say right off the bat, people who love the book, there are certain elements not in the movie. The movie's called Justice League: The New Frontier, slightly different from the book. The book features a lot of characters that aren't from the Justice League, a lot of DCU characters like the Losers and John Irons and things like that. Those characters are not really in the book, but they're seen. They're sort of referred to in news. Newspapers in the movie.
In the movie, right? Yeah, and I thought, and the thing is about that is that the only negative thing I could take against the movie was that I thought it was too short. You know, like I wanted more. But that could be probably part of our bias towards loving the material. But I thought that what didn't make it into the movie, I still felt its presence in that way, like that one shot where the Losers were in a newspaper article about the Losers and that kind of quick montage about John Henry. And so, I thought that was well done. So,
well, I think what people need to understand is that they've switched the focus slightly. The New Frontier was basically the entire DC universe, from the superheroes to the minor characters to the people like the Losers. But the movie's about the Justice League, so they took away everything that wasn't to do with the Justice League to focus on them, because they only have 70-some-odd minutes to do the film,
when you make something like this, you've got to... You know, I applaud them for, I guess, cutting away stuff so they could focus, because otherwise it could easily become – the book was kind of sprawling, and it could easily have gotten out of control in movie form. And I think that that the cuts that they made to that sort of serve this medium, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sprawling works for a huge graphic novel, not so much for an animated film, probably.
Right. Yeah, I didn't feel it missing, I guess. And Gordon, you know, you didn't see anything, so did you feel like you were missing anything?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't read the book, but I do have to say that once I finished the movie, I ordered the book, because right. I thought the movie was amazing. And I, you know, as much as I might have an aversion to superheroes, I mean, this is what I'm looking for. This is the type of superhero story that I like, and I'm excited to read the book because I'm hoping it does get more into other things. The actual art, the animation was phenomenal. I love that style.
Yeah, and it's funny because I during this movie, like Superman Doomsday, remember Superman Doomsday to me felt like a cartoon. This felt like a movie. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, like the opening sequence and the end sequence really felt like a Pixar movie almost.
We can talk to the end sequence for a second.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I know. Oh, Jesus.
I had goosebumps and I was starting to well up. it ends with a speech from John Kennedy.
Yeah.
And no modern day president speaks like that anymore.
Yeah,
unless they're written by Aaron Sorkin.
Right. Well, Obama's pretty good, but let's not get political. So.
No, but I mean, just I don't care about party. They don't. They tend to be much more scripted than Wood, and there's no. It doesn't raise your spirit up like that. And then the montage, which shows what this movie what the events of this movie leads to, what the future is for the DCU. It was just fantastic. I thought the ending was amazing. And I love the beginning too. The beginning was a great way to get a lot of exposition out of the way.
There was a point in the movie where I was watching it on my computer while my wife was working next to me, so I had headphones on. And when – can we do spoilers? Is that okay?
Oh, yeah. We probably should. I mean, we got to do our typical spoiler alert, I guess. We're going to talk about what happens in the movie. So if you don't want to know and you want to wait to watch the movie, press pause. So
yeah. Go ahead.
So when Hal Jordan is heading up to Mars for the first time – well, the only time, I guess. But when he's heading up there and Superman actually goes up and saves his life, I mean, I was getting very into that part, and she grabbed my shoulder because she thought I was hyperventilating or something. I was like, oh, my God. You know, it was an emotional moment because I was excited.
Yeah.
And that's exactly actually a change from the book, isn't it? That he's not in the rocket in the book.
Yeah,
I'm going to return the book.
I couldn't remember the details of the book that well because I haven't read it in maybe a little over a year, and I, you know, it's not like I memorized the whole thing, right. But I recognize some of the moments from it, like the beginning, the montage with the green or the Martian Manhunter, like in the beginning, a lot of those were shot for shot from the book. But can I just say, as a Green Lantern fan, this has to have been the best depiction of Hal Jordan as a character, pretty much ever. I mean, like, in all the times he's shown up, the Green Lantern has shown up in animated series or, you know, even in most of the actual comic book work. Like, and I've said this before on the show that the New Frontier Hal Jordan is the best Hal Jordan that we've seen in a long, long time. And this totally held that up.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
He's a fantastic characterization.
I thought that too as I was watching because if I think back, the only time I've really seen Hal Jordan in animated form is recently in the Batman cartoon, and it was more of a kiddified version. I couldn't even tell you what he sounded like. You know, mm-hmm. it didn't leave much of an impression on me. And one of the things I loved about this movie was there were so many characters and things that I never thought in my life I'd ever see in an animated film. You know, like Hal Jordan and Slam Bradley and people like Adam Strange. And
yeah, when I saw Adam Strange, I was like, nice. And then it was great to see Green Arrow, but I wish he had some speaking parts.
Well, he didn't really have a part in the kind of book either.
Yeah, I know, but I just love his look. I love Darwin Cook's Green Arrow.
And Barry Allen, did you ever think you'd see like a kick-ass Barry Allen?
Barry was great.
Give it up for NPH?
Well, let's talk about the voice casting then, because I thought, personally, I of all the major characters, I thought everybody was really spot on.
I thought Kyle MacLachlan as Superman was great, which was a surprising casting for me.
Huge surprise, because I didn't know what to expect. I kept waiting for him to talk, and I was sort of apprehensive because I was expecting Dale Cooper to come out, but it wasn't. It was a gruffer.
And I thought Neil Patrick Harris did great as the Flash. The only one person, and I was excited for Jeremy Sisto as Batman, and it kind of to me was a little too gravelly.
I loved Jeremy Sisto as Batman.
All right, that's fine. I mean, he wasn't bad. It was good, you know. So
I think that people are reacting. I've seen a few negative reactions to some of the voice casting. I think that has more to do with familiarity. And if you can then get yourself in the mind space that these are not the same, this isn't the animated series Batman, or this isn't the Tim Daly Superman.
Right.
You know, if you get past that, you see how it works. I think Neil Patrick Harris is actually the strongest voice choice in my mind. That and Martian Manhunter.
Yeah.
He was awesome.
I love the depiction of Martian Manhunter and how he handled them. And I do got to say the scene with Martian Manhunter and Batman where when they're first meeting and when Batman leaves and how Batman explains that he, you know, has a $10,000 piece of meteorite for the guy in Metropolis and now I know I just need to spend a penny on a book of matches for you. Like, which
awesome.
It was chilling. It was great. It was just so good. But to get back to the Flash, I mean, we recently were for those of you who are curious why are all voices are strange, we're coming off of WonderCon this past weekend where we saw, you know, Darwin Cook was a special guest and he talked a lot about New Frontier and he spoke about how he really didn't like the Flash. How the Flash, and he even says it in the movie and in New Frontier, is like the Flash is like, I just fight, you know, muggers and gorillas, you know, but yet he's still able to use the character in a way in the story that propels the story and really makes you like that a great depiction. The love that you have for the Green Lantern depiction, Josh, now I have for his Flash depiction because I'm a big Flash fan.
Oh, I mean, that was fantastic. Yeah. And then to take it even one step further, the third character who stood out for me was Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anybody get a good handle on Wonder Woman in anything I've ever read.
I haven't seen anybody depict her the way they depict her, like the big stature and all that. Like, oh,
she's as big as Superman. They get eye to eye. They're nose to nose.
Yeah.
Just from the first scene when she goes sort of, you know, mano a mano with Superman about those women, and that's in the book. I was like, oh my god, that's great. Like, she's got a real unique and distinct personality, and it was believable. And I was like, I would read more of this character. But I don't believe she exists elsewhere.
Right.
Wonder Woman is so hard to depict. I guess it's not hard, but people just don't know what to do with her.
Right.
I was just going to talk a little bit more about what Darwin Cook said without taking away from everything he told us. But just that he plays up the idea of the not the alien superheroes or not superheroes that are truly super, but more like real people that are doing the super things. And I mean, I just felt like it was so awesome and made it so easy to get into the characters.
Right.
Even the aliens had – they were more – like John Jones might be from Mars and might be able to shapeshift and fly and stuff, but he was very, very human.
Yep.
Flash, he could run fast, but he's still that – he felt the limitations of his superpower.
Yeah, he felt insecure compared to the other guys and all that kind of stuff.
Hal Jordan doesn't even use his ring till the very last moment of the film.
Right.
And then there's, you know, and a lot of it's the soldiers like Rick Flag and King Faraday and stuff. Yep. That's what makes it really relatable.
Superman is kind of a bitch in this.
I gotta say, the scene when they rally together to fight the menace, and Superman kind of floats in and gives his motivating speech and is like, "All right, now let's go," and then gets his butt whooped. Was just like, I was just like, and everybody in the movie is gasping because you're like, "Well, fuck, you know, damn, what are they gonna do?" You know, and that was the same. I had that same feeling, and it was just like, and then what happens?
Fucking Ray Palmer walks up and goes, "Hello, I'm Ray Palmer."
Yeah, exactly.
And you know they're fine because yeah. Ray Palmer is
a genius, but similarly when they're up against the wall when they're fighting later in the movie, and then Wonder Woman swoops in kind of like as the cavalry, you get that same kind of rise and the same kind of like like rock on moment, you know. And it was just, I mean, he used the weight of the big guns just correctly to give the story resonance, you know what I mean? Because the thing is, the DC universe, as much as we say Superman's unstoppable, all that kind of stuff, you can't always depend on him. You know what I mean? Like, something's going to happen. You can't rest on your laurels. You need other characters like Green Arrow, Flash, Martian Manhunter to step in and save the day when the big guns can't, you know? So it was great.
I love the little unspoken moments in the film. Like, every time something happened, Green Arrow would draw his bow and point his arrow at somebody.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I love silent Jim Gordon.
Yeah, that was good.
Walking around the police station doing paperwork and stuff and not even speaking a word. I mean, that stuff like that made me laugh.
Yeah, yeah. Jeez.
So, you know, scary to say it, but was there anything that didn't live up to your expectations?
Other than the length? No.
I had no expectations going in, but I thought it was...
They were met.
They were met and passed. No, I loved it. I just loved it, that's all.
I would say that the only complaints I have, and I don't remember if these were in the first book or not, and honestly, to be fair, I didn't really notice this until I started thinking about it after the fact, but there was a little bit of that, like, convenience kind of thing, like, where Superman sort of, for no real reason that they explained, went down immediately and then didn't show up again until the end. And then, like, Diana was completely hurt and hospitalized, and then she showed up completely fine. Right at the end, that kind of thing happened a couple of times. It wasn't so much that it bothered me, but I did notice it, and I think that they decided not to focus on those sort of story aspects, since that wasn't what it was really about. I guess. Right. That was the only thing I really noticed.
Yeah, I mean, you're right to a certain degree. I mean, the fact that Superman is out of commission for the entire fight until Aquaman shows up for, you know, no apparent reason other than just delivering it. I am Arthur Curry of Atlantis. Like, I thought that was... Right. their romantic weekend together while the fight is going on. but you know, you're right. It is convenient, but it's. I mean, at some degree, you got to throw that out the window and just say, hey, it's a cartoon, it's a movie. You got to let it, you know, it serves the purpose of the story. I don't think that was a major flaw. So, but I gotta, more than that.
Anything, it made me want to go back and read the book again, though, because while it was fun and it was really good, it was an interpretation of the book, which I consider to be the superior work, which is usually the case with source material.
Right.
I think, I mean, that's absolutely true. The book is superior. That's normal. But I also think at this point, this is fantastic. This is a fantastic movie.
This honestly, like I said earlier, Superman Doomsday to me was a cartoon. This is an example of this medium, them adapting the comics into DVD, into movies and stuff like that, done well. Like honestly, I put this up against up with the Incredibles. You know what I mean? Like, it felt to me like I wanted to see it in a theater. You know, it felt to me like a strong movie.
One question I was wondering about, Josh, what did you think of the voice work for Hal Jordan?
I was fine with it. I didn't really have any prior expectations one way or another. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't thrown off by it, so I guess it worked, you know, just fine for me. David Boreanaz is an Ithaca alum, so, you know, who am I to complain?
I thought he did. It's really funny because I found myself going back to the voice acting. Number one, I thought Boreanaz did a good job. I liked the voice, yep. Voice of Hal Jordan. I thought it was really good. I found myself in the first like 20 minutes trying to figure out who was doing what voice. And actually not enjoying it because I was like working. And the moment
that's the one problem with using a cast of names, yeah. Is that it can be distracting.
The moment I forgot about that, all was fine. So,
well, you know what? I made a conscious decision in the beginning of the movie, because a lot of times when you start watching something like this, and they're not big names. It's not like a DreamWorks movie where they're like Tom Hanks and so and so, but it was more like character actors that they used. But I kind of made the decision not to look them up as I was watching it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, for example, I was listening to The Flash, and I had sort of glanced over who the voices were, or I saw them in the credits, I guess. And I was listening to The Flash, and I was just thinking, that voice is great. And it sort of, I sort of figured out halfway through. I was like, oh, it's Neil Patrick Harris. He's doing great. But like, I just decided to not look until it was over.
Yeah, which I think is the right thing to do. I think.
Yeah, because I was annoyed a little bit the same way as Ron was, and I was like, which one is Kira Sedgwick? I'm like, is that the Flash's girlfriend? Or
yeah,
is it
I still
Lois
don't know
Lane?
Who she was. Who was she?
It was Lois Lane.
Oh, she was Lois. Interesting. Cool.
Wasn't Brooke Shields Carol Ferris?
Oh, I thought I thought the Carol Ferris Hal thing was fantastic, by the way. I thought that whole romance was just – it felt so true to those two characters being together. It was so good.
If you think about it, Hal Jordan's big origin moment – is when Abin Sur gives him the ring, and that's the only origin moment, I guess, other than the Martian Manhunter that was portrayed in this. So he kind of – this is Hal Jordan's story.
And
honestly.
Aquaman.
Yeah. Aquaman just drove up in his big grab car.
And they showed the Flash getting his powers in the opening credits. So
yeah, but it wasn't like they
– it was oblique, too. You didn't know what you were looking for.
The point when – and I really liked that Hal, like, he got the ring and he didn't immediately do anything with it.
Absolutely. He was like I've got this
and
ring.
Just like at the moment when he finally takes use of his powers and then uses the ring, I was like, I was all jazzed for it. I was like, yeah. That's Green Lantern. Yes. And
there was a lot of moments like that in the film where you're just like, this is why people love superheroes.
Yeah. That's
just the pure adrenaline, the pure fun of it.
I do wonder a little if, like, I think this story is greatly benefited from the fact that it takes place when it does.
Absolutely.
Because you can give the hokiness of the DC characters sometimes a little bit more leeway because it's at the time where if they were stuck in the present, this cynicalness, they may not mesh as well, which is, I think, a great story choice, really.
Oh, it's part of the brilliance of the original book is putting it in the time frame he did.
Right.
And just tying it to the political thing, the whole just the JSA being tossed out because of they're afraid of being communist. People thinking the Flash is a communist because his suit was red. And,
yeah, I thought that was great.
And actually naming McCarthy.
Yeah.
That certainly puts you in a position where you know where you stand, I guess.
Yeah. And also, at the end, the Flash is the only one seen getting a medal from the president, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. And I love when the Flash did the Flash addressing the TV, you know, the news station, and I mean I'm a huge Flash fan, so I just love the whole Vegas, the Captain Cold.
The whole Flash depiction of his powers and how they work was great.
Yeah. So and also his smarts. I mean, because Barry was pretty smart, you know, and figuring out the bombs, you know, and all that stuff. So, yeah. All right. I mean, it's like I've been iffy about animation in these DC movies, but after this one, I gotta say, with the right material, I don't know how much I'm for the manga Batman that's due next, but I gotta say this one really did it for me. So.
Well, the right people were behind it. This is one of those ones where all the things come together. Whereas Darwin Cook had been involved with the producers of it prior because he worked on, you know, the animated Batman and Batman Beyond.
Yep.
And so, you know, when he gets to be involved with this and making a story and they all want to do it together and they all sort of end up on the same page, you get that sort of what's the word I'm looking for?
The magic.
Yes, it's magic.
This is magic.
This is my fatigue speaking. And I think that this was one of those things where everything sort of comes together and it works out really well. And it's rare when that happens, quite honestly.
Yeah. This is one that you could hold up. This is one that I would proudly give to anybody to watch. And
absolutely.
Yeah. So
it's just a good old fashioned superhero story.
Yeah. But not.
Were
not,
you
like,
surprised?
Well, I mean, I didn't, like you were just saying about the cheesiness, I was just worried that, like, I would get too annoyed with the characters.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen.
No, he gave them enough respect. They sort of exist right in that beautiful middle ground between too realistic and too idealistic.
Yeah.
It was a really nice balance that not enough people hit, and I think that that's one of the things. And like I said, putting it in the 50s, I think, helps that in some intangible way, but... I think we've said about as many good things about it as we can.
Yeah, I mean, we're just gushing at this point. So,
I loved it.
So go check out, what is it called? Justice League of America, the New Frontier.
Justice League, the New Frontier.
Justice
You've
League,
got
New
it
Frontier.
Right.
Yeah, we'll have a link to, if you are interested in purchasing it over on Amazon, we'll have a link to it on ifanboy.com. But we're really, really excited to mention we said we were just coming off the heels of WonderCon. This weekend we co-sponsored a party at Isotope Comics in San Francisco with James Syme, the proprietor of Isotope, for Darwin Cook and the after party of the premiere of New Frontier at WonderCon. And for those of you who are reading online and who couldn't make it, you saw that we had limited edition pint glasses designed by Darwin Cook for sale at those party. They completely sold out, except for the fact that that we put a couple aside for the iFanboy faithful. So
we smuggled them out.
We smuggled them out. In fact, when James
Gordon caused a diversion, and then we snuck out the back.
When James found out, he was kind of pissed. But then he thought, "That's cool. That's cool." So so what we want to do is we want to give those pint glasses away to you all. In addition to those pint glasses, one special grand prize winner will win a signed copy of the New Frontier DVD, signed and sketched on by Darwin Cook, as well as a limited edition art print of the invitation to the party that Darwin Cook himself designed. So if you were able to send us an email to contact@ifanboy.com with the subject New Frontier Contest and answer this question.
And if you get that subject line wrong,
you're out. Yeah,
you're out.
It's got to be New Frontier Contest, and you got to answer this question correctly, and then we will pick from the winners 10 winners of the pint glasses and one special grand prize winner. All right, here's the question. You ready? The New Frontier's title draws inspiration from a speech by John F. Kennedy, or whatever number president. when and where did he deliver that speech where he used the term the New Frontier? Okay, so when and where did he deliver that speech?
You heard echoes.
Send an email to contact@ifanboy.com, subject line New Frontier Contest. So the deadline for entry in the contest is midnight Eastern Standard Time on March 6th, Thursday, March 6th, midnight. Get your emails in, and then we will announce the winner on both the weekly iFanboy comic book podcast audio show as well as the on iFanboy.com. So get your emails in, and good luck to you all.
They're pretty sweet glasses.
Yeah, they are. They're awesome.
If you want to see pictures of them, go to iFanboy.com. There's a thread about the New Frontier movie, and in that thread, you'll see pictures of the pint glasses, and they're pretty.
Yeah, and be sure to go to that thread and tell everybody what you thought of the movie. There's a great discussion going on there about it as people get their hands on the DVD, so check that out.
Thank you.
I loved it.
I loved it, too. All right. So we hope you enjoyed this special edition podcast of us talking about the movie, and be sure to head over to ifanboy.com to check out our audio show and our video show, as well as the great discussion there and all the comic pull list stuff that you can do there. It's a good place to be.
So. It's as if the movie knocked us so on our ass we forgot how to podcast.
Exactly.
They should make a flip book.
Of what?
They should take, New Frontier and make a full-on flipbook.
I think they could probably make a whole series of products on New Frontier, and we'd buy them all. So
I've got 5 action figures. I mean, what more do they want?
Action figures are sweet.
We want more.
Yeah.
The action figures.
Yeah. They're nice, Gordon. They're nice.
All right. So until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
I'm Gordon the intern.
You sound so happy about it.
I'll move up one day.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over. In your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it, and sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.